Pro Bono Radio is part of the Queen's Chapter of Pro Bono Students Canada. The Pro Bono Radio team are not lawyers, and this is not legal advice.
Hello, and welcome to Pro Bono Radio. My name is Gilad Mayansky, and I will be the host of today's episode. Summer jobs. We've all had them, from July spent scooping ice cream to August spent showing off the latest big summer blowout sales. The summer job is a seminal part of your late teen years and young adulthood, representing the steady increase of responsibility you receive as you exit your childhood years. However, during this transition, the demands a person is expected to take on often involve a heightened level of caution or care. For me, this manifested in my employment as a summer camp counselor. Despite having no prior experience taking care of children, I found myself responsible for the supervision and safety of over 60 14 to 15-year-olds. Over the course of 6 weeks, I took on a duty that was far more consequential than any previous position I had held. This brings me to the subject of today's episode. What is this duty? Despite only being a young adult, many of the summer jobs you have will entail a higher duty of responsibility. Have you ever wondered what that duty is? What are you personally liable for? Summer jobs are merely a stepping stone on the way to full workplace responsibility and accountability, so I'd like to help unpack this question through the lens of tort law by explaining the concept of duty of care, standard of care, and foreseeability. To explore this today, I will be talking with Heidi Brown, a personal injury lawyer and a partner at Bogorock & Associates LLP. Before starting at Bogorock's, Heidi spent 7 years as a counsel to the Children's Lawyer Ministry of the Attorney General for the Province of Ontario, where she represented the legal interests of children in various litigation matters. Based on my experiences as a camp counselor, I will pose a series of hypothetical but realistic issues that can emerge over the duration of a summer to help define what this duty is. We will start with the duty of a mere counselor before working our way through examples of heightened duties to help clear up what these important concepts are. Through our conversation, I hope to clarify what duty and standard of care you owe at your summer job. Hi, Heidi. Thank you so much for joining us today. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Gilad. Thank you so much for having me. I am a personal injury lawyer, and I was called to the bar in 1993. So I've been doing this for quite some time, over 30 years now. I am a partner at the law firm of Bogorosh & Associates LLP in Toronto, where we practice exclusively personal injury and medical malpractice litigation. We also handle some complex occupiers liability matters, slip and falls, injuries from products, and we do various degrees of injury, but all on the plaintiff side. We do not do any defense work. For the first 7 years of my career, I worked for the Ministry of the Attorney General in an office called the Office of the Children's Lawyer, where I exclusively practiced law for children. And since 1999, I have been practicing in private practice with Bogorosh & Associates, and it's a very fulfilling, rewarding career, which I don't know if any of your listeners are considering, but would be more than happy to share the aspects of that with anyone who's interested.
That's awesome. I'm thrilled to get to speak with you today. And so I just wanted to introduce a few hypotheticals so that we can help sort of explain the tort liability duty of care that one could encounter at a summer position, such as as a summer camp counselor. So the first hypothetical I'd like to introduce is a pretty standard one that could happen pretty frequently or easily. A 10-year-old child is playing soccer at a summer camp with direct exposure to the sun under the supervision of a counselor. Due to the heat, the exercise, and the direct exposure of the sunlight, they pass out due to heat exhaustion and dehydration. From a legal perspective, how would you analyze the staff's responsibility in that situation? Should they have been supervised more cautiously, cautioned about a hat, bringing a water bottle, for example?
So I appreciate and thank you for the question. It's a very broad topic and one I could probably speak about for a week. But if we try to zero in and narrow down the specific question, we're talking about the liability of summer camps and staff at summer camps and the specific issue of heat stroke and dehydration in children, which are both very common in the summer and can lead to children becoming very seriously ill. Dehydration and heat stroke can, in some cases, lead to very long-lasting serious impacts for children. And they're two different things, dehydration and heat stroke. But in the most severe cases of heat stroke, when the body's core temperature is usually defined as being above 40 degrees Celsius, the body can't cool itself through sweating and can lead to serious conditions like seizures, brain damage, organ failure, coma, in the worst case, even death. So the issue of proper supervision and monitoring children on a hot day at a summer camp is a very important one, and one that we might see as questions coming from the public to our office inquiring as to whether or not there might be a case arising from such a scenario. So the first thing that sort of to start at very basic premise is that almost everyone owes someone else a duty of reasonable care to avoid injuring someone else. Different professionals might owe a higher standard or degree of care depending on their professional experience and qualifications. But people in certain contexts, certainly in a camping context, owe those that are in their charge, that are paying for being kept safe, owe them a duty to keep them safe. The first thing to be aware of in a camping setting, which is very similar to a school setting in many respects, is that whoever is supervising a camper functions in the place of the parent. We call it in Latin in loco parentis. So a teacher or a counselor or a camp director is really acting in the place of the parent when they're looking for a child. And under common law, camp counselors and their supervisors owe a duty to these young participants in the summer camp that is similar, comparable to that of a careful, reasonably prudent, careful parent. So we look in the common law at the reasonable standard based on what a parent would do. But we also, in Ontario and in most provinces in Canada, we have statutory provisions that govern how to keep people safe. So we in Ontario have a statute called the Occupiers Liability Act. And under that act, camps owe a duty to take reasonable care to keep campers and staff, every visitors, anybody who's on the premises safe, to maintain safe premises, to supervise adequately, and to train staff properly in a reasonable way. And remember the word reasonable, because we're going to come back to it later, I expect. It's not a standard of perfection. It's a standard of reasonableness. What would an objective person deem to be a reasonable standard? It's not a standard of perfection. So with regard to dehydration and heat exhaustion, heat stroke specifically, I would argue that the camp's duty to take reasonable care, their duty to their campers and the parents by extension, includes certain things like training and vetting staff who will be working with the children to institute safe staff-to-camper ratios, to teach the staff how to spot the first signs of heat illness, to train staff in first aid, CPR, to make reasonable efforts to monitor children to ensure they're engaged in safe play, to check the weather conditions every day and Environment Canada's heat alerts, give children cool places to play on hot days, playing in the shade if they're going to play, making sure there's frequent water breaks and monitoring the amount of fluids the children are drinking, taking in, and adjusting or canceling outdoor activities during a heat wave if it mandates, the situation mandates it. So it's been a long answer to a question, but the gist is that if a child gets sick from the heat at camp, and these rules that I sort of just outlined that I would consider as a lawyer to be reasonable weren't followed, the staff could well be found liable, and the camp can be called vicariously liable, which is they step in the shoes of the staff. They're the employees. They're found liable. They're responsible for the negligence of their staff. And indeed, they could be exposed to a finding of liability in a lawsuit. I haven't even touched on the issue of foreseeability, which is a whole other issue, and I can certainly do that now if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I was just going to follow up with that. I thought it was a really interesting point when you discussed reasonableness, sort of as you don't have to behave perfectly, but you have to behave within a spectrum of what a reasonable person would do. And so, for example, within this hypothetical, we assume it's a normal child without any prior medical conditions. But in an additional hypothetical, let's say that this child perhaps has a medical condition that makes their low blood sugars, some form of asthma, something that might make this issue even worse, more dangerous, a medical condition that might make the situation more threatening. Would that play into this spectrum? Like how perfect does the staff have to act if there's sort of an additional burden placed on the child?
Good question. So let me just briefly touch on the notion of foreseeability. It is a very in-depth topic. The Supreme Court of Canada has written on it extensively, and there are entire tort law courses that are devoted specifically to the issue of foreseeability. But to try and keep it as simple as possible, in Canadian tort law, a duty of care requires a relationship of sufficient proximity, which means an analysis of both reasonable foreseeability and proximity. So in general, how do I say it? Someone owes a duty of care to those whom reasonably to have in contemplation of being at risk when they act or they fail to act. And it's, as we talked about before, it's to be determined objectively. What would have been known by someone with the potential defendant's knowledge and experience? And you can't base it on hindsight, for example, knowing, you know, after the fact that the harm has occurred. You have to look at determine it at the time of the alleged wrongdoing. So there have to be facts in evidence at the time of the alleged wrongdoing to find that someone reasonably should have foreseen risk of the type of harm that subsequently takes place to a person in the camper situation. So in the case where we have this added layer of the child having pre-existing medical conditions, most caregivers know how to look out for physical accidents, but many don't realize how dangerous heat exposure can be for young children who have underlying health conditions. And most camps, most good camps, require that parents will complete a medical form for their children to be provided well in advance of the session to alert the camp of any medical conditions that the child has, like allergies to food or insect bites or what types of medication they need to be on. And the ones I think that you just cited are this particular child in this fact pattern has asthma or potentially low blood sugar or something like that, which in and of itself could contribute to a much worse situation of this dehydration or heat exposure. So what does a camp do? What should a camp do to fulfill their duty of care? And I find that most good camps have instituted their own policies to optimize the care that they provide. So what would those be? Having trained medical personnel meet with the staff to provide them with information about the child's special needs before the kids have come to camp. And having those medical special, a doctor, a nurse, a trained paramedic on site to be aware of those specific medical conditions and treat them in the event that a situation arises, to have schedules, designated times, checklists for medication administration and things like that. So this standard is one of reasonableness. Children can fall ill even in the care of their own parents. So the test becomes what is reasonable in any given set of circumstances on an objective standard. Going back to what I said earlier, if you have a camp doctor or a nurse or a paramedic who didn't do something in keeping with their professional standard of care, so let's say they didn't administer the proper medication or they didn't administer any medication or they failed to meet their professional standards, that could even qualify as a medical malpractice, which is separate and distinct from a breach of standard in tort or under the statutory regime of occupier's liability. So it's opening up the camp not only to a lawsuit in tort under the Occupier's Liability Act, but also potentially to a medical malpractice case if there are medical personnel there who have that training and didn't live up to their duty. So if a child shows obvious signs of heat stroke and the trained nurse or doctor doesn't recognize that and gives improper treatment, delays getting emergency vehicle involved, parents may very well be within their right to pursue a medical negligence claim as well. Now, I've worked at a summer camp. My children have attended summer camp. And we all know that sometimes parents don't fully do what they're supposed to do and live up to their end of the bargain. And if they don't fully disclose a child's complete health history on the medical form, the parents are potentially muddying the waters and opening themselves up to a finding of contributory negligence if a lawsuit is to be initiated by the parents. I would argue that the parents have an obligation to make sure that anyone that they are entrusting their children to for any length of time are fully aware of a child's underlying health conditions. And it really does depend on the degree of experience. An 18 or 19-year-old counselor who doesn't have a lot of medical training is not going to be held to the same standard as a trained professional. And if you none of you know that the children have asthma, it's pretty hard, unless you're a trained person who's able to spot that just by asking the right questions or doing an examination, it's going to be very difficult to hold them to a standard of negligence in those situations. So, in spite of all the safety measures in place, precautions, training, care, accidents can still happen. But the key is if you took reasonable care to keep the kids safe and help them when they were hurt, you're insulating yourself from liability.
I find that really interesting where you talk about sort of the insulation the higher ups in the camp have to provide in this situation, like as much protection from liability as possible. For example, when you were transporting the child out of the summer camp, perhaps the injuries have been exacerbated to a certain point. They now need medical treatment at a hospital. I'm kind of interested in exploring foreseeability here. If on the way to the hospital, the ambulance has to swerve off the road. There's some major incident along the way, and the ambulance swerves off the road, leading to further harm for this child. Would this be a foreseeable outcome that the camp would have to react to, have to form some sort of protection against? How foreseeable does the summer camp and the board of directors have to act within that?
Well, you're sort of getting into an area that that takes you outside the liability of the camp. And we operate on a premise that you can only be held responsible. A person can only be held liable or responsible for a breach of a duty of care that causes certain damage that must be linked to that breach of duty. So, in the example that we've talked about, child has heat stroke, they're not feeling well. If they fully recover and there is really not going to be any long-standing health implications for this child, the damages aspect is going to be very low, right? So, it's not likely that you're going to, if you're a parent, go ahead and sue the camp if hopefully, which is what everybody hopes, the outcome is good. The child makes great recovery and they're no worse for wear and they feel better in a few hours. You don't go to court and you don't bring a lawsuit unless it's going to have a corresponding financial level of compensation that's going to make it worthwhile. There are other remedies, by the way, besides lawsuits that parents have at their disposal to consider if financial compensation isn't the only thing that they're after. So you can also make a report to a provincial licensing authority. Let's say the camp is licensed by a specific ministry and you want to make a complaint to that provincial ministry or a public health department or even a child protection service. They are required to investigate any types of complaints that they receive, and perhaps the camp could end up losing its license. It's not a compensatory thing, but it's a remedy that could have very negative and serious results for the camp. There's also potential human rights remedies that are available. You can file a human rights complaint if you're a parent, under certainly for Ontario, which is the province that I practice in, under territorial or provincial human rights legislation. If a child's disability was ignored for some reason, which led to more exposure to heat or delayed care or something like that, you can also make a complaint, which is a different type of remedy. It sort of is a more like a peace of mind type of remedy. So there are a whole host of different things that you can look at here in the context of this. But once the child's in the ambulance, if the ambulance goes off the road and crashes and the child ends up with a broken leg or a brain injury that would not have flown from the original breach of the duty of the staff member not supervising or putting a hat on the child or giving them enough to drink or that sort of thing. The ambulance has a duty to ensure that they drive in keeping with the rules of the road. But if they're responsible for some additional harm to the child, you would be, as a lawyer, suing everybody. But you only typically are required to pay for the harm that you cause, right? So if Camp caused maybe a little bit of heat stroke, that would have gotten better. But ambulance caused broken leg and brain injury, ambulance is likely going to be on the hook for a lot more damages than the camp, if that makes sense. I realize we may be out of time, but yeah. I would be remiss if we didn't mention waivers in the context of camp, because in most cases, before a parent enrolls a child, most camps require parents or guardians to sign waivers that are designed to absolve the camp from any liability for injuries to children, and that the parents are accepting the risks, even in the case of negligent inaction or action on the part of the camp. And waivers are also a very interesting area of the law. They arise in any risky type of situation, on a ski hill, in a trampoline park. There's lots of interesting cases and decisions that talk about this. But what I wanted to just have your listeners know is that simply signing one of these waivers won't in and of itself necessarily disqualify a claim for compensation for damages. An effective waiver has to explicitly release the camp operator from liability. And usually they cannot escape what's called gross negligence in the case of a child. Courts do not like to see negligence involving children fall by the wayside. Any settlements for children need court approval of a judge. So as tight as these waivers are often written, courts might disregard them if the injury stems from gross negligence, and we can try and establish that there's some way of proving something that that the camp didn't do right by the child. So I really wanted to make sure that we covered that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for walking us through all the like duty of cares that might correspond at the same time, any of the different standard of care that arise. Yeah, I think for as broad as the questions may have been, I think you really helped illustrate all the different duties that could arise or the different obligations you owe the people that surround you. And so, yeah, thank you for explaining to us how as a summer camp, all of these responsibilities may arise, even from like the lowest level of just being the 17-year-old camp counselor taking care of children for the first time, all the way to a reckless ambulance driver. This has been Gilad Mayansky and Heidi Brown for Pro Bono Radio. Thank you all for joining us today.